it seems like people in car-loving KC finally care about public transportation. People seem excited about using it, even if they don't have to, especially when it comes to trying out the new streetcar. Which is why it might be surprising that transit ridership is actually down. And not just here, it's a national trend. We just happen to be along for the ride, or so it seems. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're looking at why that's happening and why it matters on KCUR's Central Standard. Call 816-235-2888 with your personal public transit story here in Kansas City. We want to know what works for folks, what doesn't, and why on that individual household level. 816-235-2888. Let's start the conversation with Robbie Mackinnon. He's the head of the Kansas City Area Transit Authority, the KCATA. Robbie, hello.
Good morning.
I know you have some perspectives and explanations, but before we even get to that, I just want to confirm transit ridership, especially bus ridership, is down in Kansas City.
Why are we asking that question? And let me explain. As long as we keep thinking about this mode versus that mode versus that mode, I think we're missing the boat. We're trying to use the same kind of numbers and metrics that have been used for the last 25 years. I like to use the word mode agnostic, okay? If you talk about public transit as a whole, and that means anything beside a individual car, if you talk about bus service, streetcar, Uber, microtransit with Transloc, scooters, whatever, you add that all up, our ridership is even higher. Why do we have to differentiate between the different modes? It's our job to connect people to opportunities. At the end of the day, this isn't about inanimate objects going up and down the street and whichever one that is. It's about people.
Well, you know, I would say that the different modes do kind of make a difference. I hear what you're saying, but something like Uber, the cost of riding Uber as opposed to the cost of hopping on a bus is different. So if people are choosing, if people have some reason for not riding the bus, even though it might be more financially expedient for them, I think that is worth looking at. You don't?
Well, what I believe is that it's your choice. At the end of the day, to me, ridership is a byproduct. It's a byproduct of, do you have a comprehensive transit system that includes options and access for everybody? And you as a consumer, you as a customer, you don't care what's on the side of what type of mode it is. You just want to know that you can get from A to B and that you have options.
And you feel like people have adequate options and within their price range and their distance from their starting point and their ending point, et cetera?
Well, what I feel is that we're in a great time in Kansas City where we're developing, we're being very innovative. Some of the most innovative projects in the nation are happening right here, right now. And so that we are developing these options. So that at the end of the day, if you can go on one app or make one phone call and be able to say, I want to get from A to B, and you can see here are your options of how to do that, that's a great thing for you as a consumer. And again, we need to think of this, as long as we think about this as it's about people and not objects, I think it changes the dynamic immensely. Now, we can still use the old metrics and we can still do the same old things the old way, but then we're going to be the best blockbuster ever. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but I also have to say, if we're looking at people, we are looking at specific financial considerations. We're looking at philosophical things like feelings about stewardship of the earth, et cetera. And so to me, thinking about it in those terms, Uber and a bus are not equivalent.
Well,
people.
You're absolutely right. And if you want to talk about that, let's go there for just a second.
Yeah.
I mean, the ATA, we offer free public transportation for all veterans. That's all veterans within the region. That's amazing. Nobody else does that in this country. We've had about 2 million free rides on our transit service for veterans. We just made transit free for our Kansas City Public School Center and Hickman Mills School Districts, and then we're going to do the North Kansas City here in a couple of weeks. We've already had like 17,000 rides on that just since the end of November. We made transit free for our furloughed federal workers during the shutdown, and we had about 3,000 free rides. So, you know, it's providing these kind of community service too, that we think is a very big deal at the
ATA. It's partly who it serves and not just how many.
That's right.
You know, it is interesting to me, though, given all the rebranding of public transit in Kansas City for, I would say, a little more than a decade now, that we are seeing this decline. I find it a little bit counterintuitive because the effort to open people's minds to public transit seems to have been pretty effective. There was the MAX, which non-bus riders seemed willing to give a chance, and now there's all this excitement over the streetcar. Why doesn't that correlate to more ridership overall, day in and day out?
Well, I think it's going to. Look, you know, the bus system, if you will, in this region, it has for 35 years, and I can't think of a better way to say it other than it's been politically engineered. You know, you may have a council person or a commissioner from 10, 15 years ago that said, I needed a bus to go to here for my constituents. And, you know, so we find ourselves in a situation right now where our top 15 routes carry 75% of our folks. Our bottom 15 routes carry 2%. That is not efficient. So what we are in the process of doing is a redesign, a system-wide redesign. We're using Jared Walker and WSP and Mid-America Regional Council and coming together to do this system-wide redesign. What they usually say is you can either have coverage or efficiency, but you can't have both. We obviously have a huge region, right, that we can try to cover. So can we actually be efficient? I say we can do both. And we can do both because as a part of this redesign, we're not just talking about bus service. We're talking about all modes where we're going to have a micro transit and those kinds of things involved in the redesign process. And I think if we do that and we can offer better service, more efficient service on time and where people are going, that's going to put us in a much better spot.
Can you explain that tension between coverage and efficiency a little bit more for people who don't live in this topic every day, kind of?
Well, okay. I'll give one example from a development standpoint, okay? Public transit, when we talk about job access and we, you know, try and land a big company or whatever, and then it comes back and they say, well, part of the reason they didn't choose Kansas City is because of public transit, your transit system. Okay, but then nobody does anything about that. Everybody wants public transit, but nobody wants to help pay for it, right? So what happens is you go out into the hinterlands somewhere on a green field, you put up a building, you start your company, you hire 1,600 people, and then 6 months later you walk out the door and go, our public transit system stinks, okay? Public transit is the glue. It's that one thing. 75% of our riders are using public transit for education or to go to work. 75% of that. Of those millions of rides. So if that's the case, why isn't public transit a part of the process from the get-go? When it comes to development, when it comes to handing out incentives, when it comes to all those things, public transit should be right there at the table helping to design the job access and workforce for the future.
So we need to rethink our ideas about the business conversations and where public transit fits into that.
Absolutely.
You know, it is. So I do suspect that density is a crucial challenge for public transit of all kinds in a city like ours. For public
Absolutely.
Transit to be convenient, you need stops near all your destinations. But for any given stop to make sense from like your perspective at the ATA, it needs to be used by a certain like crucial number of people. We're so spread out. How are you thinking about that challenge?
Well, that's where the development aspect comes in. I'll give you an example. We just, obviously, with the city of Kansas City and the Federal Transit Administration, received $56 million to put into the corridor on Prospect. Okay. Now, normally, the ATA of the past would have said, okay, we're just going to put down stops and then we're going to put our tires on the street and we're going to run this. That's not the way we can think anymore. All right. What we have to do is take the blinders off and also know that we're a part of the community development, the economic development of that corridor. We're going to take ownership in that corridor. For example, on 27th and Prospect, there was an old abandoned building on the corner, drugs and crime and whatever. You know what we did? We went in and we bought the building and tore it down. And when we did that, we had 450 people from the neighborhood around there cheering it on. So you say, why does the ATA do that? Why are you getting into that game? Well, I'll tell you, because number one, it made our corridor safer. It made it safer for our riders. Number two, it was a community development aspect and makes our community better as well as our corridor better. And number three, now we have a spot to do some development. And if that's affordable housing or whatever that may be, then we're talking about building density. So the ATA can be a partner. It's a bi-state authority. We can use it as a partner with the city and other people to develop along corridors, to develop transit-oriented development, and put us on the right track.
So, okay, we are talking about a decline in ridership. I've been a bus rider in the past in Kansas City, and it's been a long time. So I guess that technically I am an example of a like one of those numbers, you know? And I mention this to say a couple of things. One is that while I was riding the bus pretty regularly, I did find it interesting that the people who most readily dismissed Kansas City's bus line in particular, at the time there was no streetcar, they were people who had generally never set foot on a bus. My experiences were mostly good, but how do you overcome this sort of mantra in Kansas City that I think also could be part of the problem? It's self-fulfilling.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just state the fact here, okay? You may not use public transit, but you depend on about 100 people a day who do, okay? And whether it's 15 million people, like I said, 75% are riding to school or to their job or, you know, somebody health care, need dialysis or whatever. It's a big deal. Now, let's not pretend. I know other places in the country, and I've been around to see, okay, well, there's a stigma about the bus or whatever. So, okay, let's cover the wheels of the bus. Okay, hey, let's try and put a bell on it instead of a horn. Look, it's a bus, all right? Get over it, okay? But the fact is, it's a great mode of transportation, especially in this city. And when we get more efficient as a part of this redesign, again, ridership to me is a byproduct. It's if you develop your system, then the connectivity and the modes and everything else come. I think the ridership is going to come, and I'm excited about the redesign and excited what we're going to come up with next.
When you're thinking about the redesign, I want to bring up some of the challenges I encountered back in the day, admittedly, because I wonder if these are part of the things you're thinking about. Most notably, I encountered this very basic challenge of navigating a multi-stop trip. I don't know if this has changed, but back then, you could only get maps for specific bus lines. There was not a map of the whole system. So mapping a route was a project, and that is really not tenable for a busy person, especially a busy person who also has access to a car, and therefore a much more speedy route.
Yes, ma'am. That's exactly what I was trying to say earlier. And Ron will tell you from Mid-America Regional Council, when we first started down this path about 3 years ago, the fact is even we didn't have a system-wide map.
I know that. I asked about one on this show years ago and was shocked that it wasn't just me who didn't have a map.
Isn't that amazing? Okay. Johnson County, Independence, Wyandotte County, whatever, Kansas, we didn't have a map of all of our public transit running in the city. Okay. And again, that's about talking about the way things were run 20 years ago or whatever that is. And I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just saying that was public transit. We've got to stop thinking about transit in the last 20 years and think about transit in the next 20. And that's what we're trying to do. So, yes, when it comes to mapping, all that is becoming a lot more effective. You can pay with your phone. Again, more options from an app-based products, those kinds of things. And we developed, look, you think it was hard for you? I'm visually impaired. It was really hard for me. I lost my vision 7 years ago. And when I got thrust into the paratransit service as well as a regular public transit, it was horrifying. Okay.
Talk to me about that.
Well, again, like I said, I lost my vision about 7 years ago. And so getting put into a public transit system and getting put into our paratransit ADA service was very, very difficult. I found that I could go to Independence, but then once I got to Independence, if I needed to go anywhere, I didn't qualify for that service. I can't see state boundaries, county boundaries, and city boundaries, neither should anybody else. And that was part of the problem. And that's what Mid-America Regional Council and our gang got together to try and break down those barriers to make it easier for folks. And one of those ways we did it was Ride KC Freedom. Ride KC Freedom is now one of the most innovative paratransit services in the nation. What we've done is we've allowed you to download a Ride KC Freedom app or make a phone call, and we've designed it with our folks with, and I don't say disability, okay? I have a diverse ability, all right? But we've designed it from our folks with diverse abilities out, and we've had over 100,000 trips. It's an on-demand service for our folks with diverse abilities, whereas normally you had to call 24 hours in advance or a 30-minute window each side. How was I supposed to get to this interview with that kind of service? Okay.
Exactly. I have actually been on the bus with someone who was heading for a job interview, and this is someone who I only know that because she was on her cell phone with a social worker, and she was really stressed out because she had to get first to somewhere where she could buy clothes for a job interview and then to a next stop. And she was confused, like she had missed one bus and then got on another, and she was really freaked out about, was she going to make it to her interview on time? And everyone on the bus was actually like, chiming in, offering advice, trying to figure out how to get this woman to the Walmart for her clothes and then her job interview at a certain location. But it is, you know, the practicality of not just, you were saying point A to point B, but it is really point A to point B to point C to point D.
Absolutely. And the more options you have and the better access you have, the better. So by developing this new service, if you will, Ride KC Freedom on demand, we've really opened up the doors. And what I'm trying to do is get to a point where, you know, I always hated the fact that I have to ride this service and you ride that service. Okay, so now all of our folks with diverse abilities, they can ride fixed route for free, as well as they can either use our standard old paratransit service or this new Ride KC Freedom on Demand, and then I get the same service you get. Now, we've just started to market that to what I would consider retail customers, folks without diverse abilities, but here's the fun part. A public-private partnership with TransDev, the fact of the matter is when you take a ride on Ride KC Freedom, 10% of that money comes back to help offset our cost for folks with diverse abilities. So you're like paying it forward in Kansas City, and that's a pretty unique concept.
Robbie Mackinnon, what do you know about what keeps people from riding transit despite all the reasons to do it? Environmental reasons, financial reasons, getting to read on your commute type reasons?
What keeps people from riding public transit?
Do you know?
It's all of the above, okay? But all of the above means barriers, okay? There are always, if you come up with barriers, whether it's someone like me who's visually impaired or someone like you who just doesn't want to go through that, can't plan their trip fast and effective and pick the mode or no, those are barriers. Once you break down those barriers and you make it easier for somebody to have access options and they're in control of what mode they want to take, what type of trip they want to take, we now have folks who use the bus and then jump on a scooter after that to get the last 300 yards or whatever, or use the bus and then jump on a mode to get to the streetcar to go up to that. You know, the more options you have, the more access you have to a system, the more apt you are to use it.
Call 816-235-2888 with your public transit story here in Kansas City. Public transit ridership is down, and we want to know what your story might tell us about that. 816-235-2888. Let's bring someone looking for answers in on this conversation. Ron Acklepool is with us from MARC, the Mid-America Regional Council, where they're conducting a massive survey to get a better picture of exactly what we are talking about. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Gina.
Tell me about the survey.
So How We Move KC is a household travel survey. This is a part of the planning process that we do in our role as a metropolitan planning organization for the region. Around every 10 years, although it's been a little bit longer than that since we did the last one in 2004, what we're doing is asking people to tell us information about a typical day's travel that their household makes during the months of March and April. We have letters that have gone out to folks right now. We're asking people to sign up and register to apply for the survey. We hope to have information from about 4,000 households around the region that'll tell us about the reasons they travel, the number of trips they take during the day, what modes they use, what times they travel, and it really for everybody in their household. And this is really important information that lets us do a better job of forecasting what travel patterns may look like in the future, make decisions about how to invest funding in projects over time, and really give us a better understanding about how we move around in Kansas City.
You did this once before in 2004. What did you find and what's changed since then that might contribute to different results?
Well, I'll start with what's changed since then. So in 2004, we didn't have a streetcar. We had the Max, but we only had one. There was no Uber or Lyft in Kansas City at the time. We didn't have a bike share program with Bike Walk KC. We didn't have the scooters that have shown up last summer. So there's, I think the big thing that's changed in the region is just the number of choices about how to travel in the area has changed a lot. I think we also, 2004 was ahead of the Great Recession. That had a really massive impact on the way people got around in the region. We're starting to see that recovery change patterns again. We're interested to see how that's going to play out in the region.
Well, I'm going to take a couple of quick calls before we go to our first break today. Let's talk to Rick in Strawberry Hill, who's called us at 816-235-2888. Hi, Rick.
Real quick, I moved from Liberty to downtown KCK, and I love how close everything is. And I just wanted to say I went to my daughter in Madrid for about 9 days a while back, and there are 7 million people in Madrid in a city that's one-fifth the size of Kansas City. And their transit system was absolutely amazing, and everybody used it. I think I saw one traffic jam in 9 days. But the flip side is that I walked about 12 miles a day as part of getting to and from the subway, the buses, and everything. But it's, you know, and I lost 7 pounds in 9 days.
Well, Rick,
congratulations.
You know,
cultural thing there.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I have a couple of follow-ups to Rick's comments. First of all, you know, Robbie, you must hear all the time people making comparisons to other cities that they have visited.
Sure.
Talk to me about how you respond when you hear these stories about the great public transit experience someone had on vacation.
Well, I respond by saying the past 3 years we have taken, we went from a region that didn't even have a map of all the transit within the region. And now we're at a point where we've all branded under one Ride KC brand. And now we are, as a part of a redesign, the innovative things we're doing with ADA service, the free service that we're giving folks that actually need it in the city. I would put us up, once we become a little more efficient and solve this coverage efficiency issue, I would put us up against anybody. And again, you say, well, ridership is down. Ridership is down on one mode. Ridership as a whole in a city is up.
When you say one mode, what are you talking about?
I'm talking the mode of bus. If bus is down 6%, well, you know, the streetcar had 2.1 million rides. You add that as part of the public your public transit system, which is the way we need to be thinking about this, as there is no bus versus streetcar, streetcar versus Uber. It's all together. And if we do that, our ridership is fantastic.
But
and you have one of the most innovative public transit agencies in the nation and one of the safest.
It is interesting to me because when I think about how the streetcar and bus in my mind, and like in terms of what I've also heard public officials saying about the whole idea of this, is that yes, it's a limited route on the streetcar, but it also provides connectivity with the larger bus system. So I guess I am curious about how these two things are playing together in reality at this point.
Ma'am, that is the point, okay? I mean, let's be real honest. This region has always been a region where nobody wants anybody playing around in their sandbox, right? And that's why we didn't have a map of everybody's of all public transit within a region a few years ago. Okay, we've all got to learn you know, the standard deal, rising tide floats all boats. And we've got to learn that we can compete together. And we can still do this kind of stuff where Johnson County, you're still in charge of your system. Same with Wyandotte County and same with Independence. But it's our job as your ATA, and it's not our ATA, it's yours. It's our job to help connect the dots, bring them together, and connect the region as a whole.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about transit ridership being down all over the country. What's that about? Does it matter? And if so, how could it change? 816-235-2888 is the number to call with a KC public transit story that might shed light on this. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And public transit ridership is down nationwide. We've been hearing about what that looks like locally with Robbie Mackinnon of the KCATA and Ron Acklepool of the Mid-America Regional Council. Hi again, both of you.
Hi.
Hi.
So let's take a couple of calls, and then I want to bring in a national guest on this. We're going to start, though, with a couple of these callers. I want to talk to Neil. Neil is calling us from North Kansas City. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
What do you want to share?
So I wanted to tell you my ridership is down, and it's because when I recently came in from the airport, the connecting bus or the bus took me right to Boardwalk, where I'm supposed to pick up the one that rides down Green Hills Road. But since the driver had stopped over long at a when he could have turned right and gotten us there on time, the other bus took off without me. So the fact that we don't have a connection system that lets one bus wait for the other bus in case there's some small delay, I had to walk from there. Luckily, people picked me up and took me home, but that's not the bus system.
Well, Neil, hang on. I want to get some response to this. It is the case, I mean, in other cities where I've used public transit, if one is late, you're probably going to miss your connection. But is there something on the horizon in the future of transit where there would be that ability to communicate with technology? It seems possible.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you should be able to, while you're en route on whether it's a MAX line or any other service, you should be able to see where your connection is, where the next bus is, and possibility of what other mode you might be able to use also. So, yeah, I think technology plays a big part in that discussion.
The other thing I wonder about is it kind of comes back to this question of density and ridership numbers being low, being sort of self-perpetuating, I would imagine. And here's why. You're more stranded if the bus runs less frequently. The bus runs less frequently if there are fewer riders, right?
In essence, yes. But the fact is, with this redesign, what we're looking to do is get that frequency in exactly where we need it. Okay.
Yeah, because if the next bus is coming in 5 minutes, this is not a big deal. If the next bus is coming in an hour, you have a problem.
That's right. Absolutely.
Okay. Anything to jump in on this, Ron?
No, that's exactly right. You got kind of two choices about how to handle those types of connections. One is through technology and multiple modes as a stopgap. The other is having really frequent service, which is both of those cost money to provide, and it's something that we need to take a look at really carefully.
Let's talk to Matt in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Matt.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Good.
What are your thoughts?
Basically, I used to live in the City Market years ago, and at that point in time, the transit system just did not fit needs. The thing I've seen happen is that during the last several years of the streetcar expanding bus system, where it may have fit my needs at the time, the housing development and the prices of living have gone so high. So I think the city, development and the transit system are kind of going in two different directions when you have majority of the people that are on a set based income that would use the transit more often and thrive from it are the same people that are being moved out of neighborhoods for this, gentrification, if you will. that's happening in the city. So that, I mean, I think that definitely contributes. I mean, I've seen, I still live close in the downtown area, and I've seen just downtown Crossroads and the Market just do a full turnover on the demographic of people that live there, with the cost, the rising costs. So the people that would have utilized all the expansions that were done in those areas aren't there to use it anymore.
Okay.
So I think that is probably a major contribution to the problem.
Let's get some response to this. And Ron, I want to start with you on this.
Specifically to the changings in downtown, which is, I think we really view a lot of that positively, and the long-term history for...
When you say we, you're talking about the Mid-America Regional Council.
That's right. I think that over the last 30 years or so, the trends had been that population was declining in the urban core and growing in the suburbs, end of story. I think since with the streetcars, one contributor to this, but a lot of the investment in the downtown area has really resulted in people moving back into the urban core, which is on balance a good thing. It has created more demand for housing and services in that area, and so there's that's something that we need to certainly pay attention to. But I think this demonstrates that transit can be an important amenity to attract growth and development. We want to see that happen on a number of routes in the Kansas City area, corridors in the Kansas City area, with investments like Prospect Max to provide a higher quality transit experience for folks that attracts people to move back to the areas.
You know, I appreciate your... I'm sorry.
No,
can
no,
I
go
jump
on.
In?
Yeah, that's what I was
appreciate
thinking.
Your last caller. All right, that's a great, great point. And here's what I have to say to that. Most times in public transit, you know, everybody wants to sit around at national meetings and whatever, and they want to talk about, we need to figure out how to get millennials, and we need to figure out how to get these folks to ride. You know, everybody wants to run away from the people who actually need the service, okay? We don't do that. We're running toward them. And when we're running toward them, not with just coming up with more efficient and better service, we're running toward them with making it easier, okay, from an option standpoint, and making transit free for veterans and school kids. And now we're working with safety net providers, whether it be, you know, Save Inc. or Sheffield Place or those kind of places, to say, you know what, how can we help you? How can we be a good community partner? Look, your ATA isn't in the profit business. It's your job to help solve problems. It's your job to help connect people to opportunities. And if you start thinking about this from a standpoint of it's about people and helping people, what I tell my staff every day is that, you know what, you affect more people's lives in one day than most people get to do in a lifetime.
You know, Robbie, I have a question, which is how is the ATA looking at, you can't solve the problem of people being priced out of housing.
Well, let's talk about that, okay? I actually truly believe that we have an opportunity here in Kansas City. We have an opportunity that now we have a bi-state transit authority that you as a city or a region can use. And when we talk about transit-oriented development on a corridor like Prospect or whatever, I think there is a direct connection between affordable housing and public transit. And if we can make that connection, if your transit agency can get off its backside and become a part of the solution and merge those things together, then we both get what we need.
Well, hang on with me, because I want to hear about this, how this conversation is playing out nationally. And for that, we're going to turn to Angie Schmidt. She is with us from Street Blogs USA. Streets Blog, sorry, USA. Hi, Angie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. This is quite a passionate conversation we're having. You have looked at this issue all over the country. Is the story you're hearing about Kansas City in any way unique?
No, it sounds pretty typical to me. This is going on in a lot of cities around the country right now. But there are a few cities that have managed, even though it's been sort of a difficult few years for transit, there are a few cities that have managed to buck the trend and actually grow ridership.
Can you tell me about those?
Yeah, one of the big standouts is Seattle. And you guys haven't talked much about it on this show, but one of the big things in Seattle is they've invested. And they haven't just invested. Like, Seattle just passed their third light rail tax, It was $50 billion, and that's for a very large area, including a number of counties. But they're not just investing in rail. They've also invested in expanded bus service. They voted to tax themselves. I think it was 0.1% sales tax for Seattle residents to boost bus service frequency, like one of your callers brought up being stranded because of the low frequency of the buses. Improving frequency is very important to make transit useful for people. But it does take investment.
Oh.
So they've done that in Seattle.
You know what?
It has paid dividends.
Is it Angie?
Yes.
Angie, God love you. Okay. Thank you very much for bringing that up. I don't think that is exactly the point. All right. Right now we piecemeal our funding for public transit all around this region. You know, it comes out of some people's, some city's general fund. It comes out of the taxes in Kansas City. It comes out of a different pot in Johnson County, that kind of thing. Getting our arms around a regional funding source, if you will, is the brass ring. That's what we need to do. And the stuff we're trying to do here with the innovative approaches, whether it's free transit for some folks as well as different modes and innovative new projects, I would hope would be leading us toward that discussion of regional funding. And we could do a lot more and do it together if we had that regional funding source.
So funding is clearly an obstacle. Angie, am I wrong to think that interest in public transit and openness to it in a notoriously car-loving culture, American culture, that the interest and openness is up? It feels like less of a fringe position to be advocating for less reliance on cars, but maybe that's just in my circles. Is that a sort of contradiction in your mind, that people are maybe more open and interested but not riding as much?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I do think that there's increased interest, but I think it tends to be pretty popular in urban areas. I know a lot of people in rural areas have no interest in it, and that makes total sense because it isn't very useful in rural areas.
Yeah, density again.
Right. But yeah, I think in a lot of cities, transit ballot issues tend to do pretty well. A couple years ago, people were keeping track and they were, you know, three quarters were passing. And it depends a lot on what's offered, you know, but I do think there is a real desire for people to have alternatives to driving for every trip. I know I feel that way really strongly. And it's not just about transit, trails, sidewalks, the ability to walk safely, that's being denied to people. And I do think cities that can offer an alternative to that, they tend to be pretty popular.
Well, we're going to come right back to this conversation. We're curious about why it is that numbers are down for public transit ridership, even as public transit is gaining traction as an idea that people want to support. If you support public transit as an idea but don't actually use it in your life, what's stopping you? 816-235-2888 is the number to call, but do it fast. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And in case you're just tuning in, we are talking about public transit ridership numbers, what they tell us, what they don't, about this mode of getting around from place to place here in Kansas City. We have a full switchboard and we have a lot of great guests. We're talking to Ron Acklepool of Mid-America Regional Council, Robbie Mackinnon of the KCATA, and a national reporter covering transportation issues, Angie Schmidt of Streets Blog USA. Hi again, everyone.
Hello.
Hey.
So, Angie, I do want to ask you one. You were talking earlier, and we got a little bit derailed, about cities that have bucked the trend of ridership going down. You mentioned Seattle as a place where they've bucked the trend mostly through funding. Are there any other lessons that we can learn, sort of crucial lessons, from cities that have bucked this trend?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big lessons is not to neglect bus riders, the people that are actually riding buses right now and the kind of service they're getting. So another city that has done okay is Columbus and also Houston. They've both done bus redesigns the way you guys are talking about doing there, where they sort of thought critically about the way their bus routes were laid out and how they could make them a little more user-friendly. So that seems to have helped them. But you can't take your bus riders for granted, because there's sort of this false dichotomy that people are either transit riders and that's their only choice, or they drive cars and they're not transit riders. But the truth is, everyone has a choice. They could, you know, even if they're low income, they could take out a high interest loan. They could try to get a ride. People always have a choice. And it really depends on how good the service is.
And wealthy people have the choice of using public transit, in theory.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, I'm just saying that the choice also goes the other way, that people with means right. could choose to ride public transit.
It's sort of a continuum. And the people that are sort of marginal, there are some people that you're never going to get. And there are some people that you already have and they're hard to lose. But there's more people that are sort of in the middle ground. And those are the people you can get with better service.
Well, I want to bring in a caller right now, because we have a caller who might have something to share on this point. Andrew in Lenexa. Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. Share your thoughts.
I just wanted to add that when they're doing the redesign, make sure they consider working or hourly workers when they're doing the redesign in regards to, like, when the bus gets to the final destination.
Can you explain what maybe your experience has been that makes you bring this up?
Sure. So years ago, I worked at Truman Lakewood, and I lived in Northland, and I wanted to use the bus because, you know, save money and to kind of plant my car for a while. And so my experience was I tried to figure out a route from the Northland to Truman. I used Google search to get there. Even if I drove to City Market, I'd have to leave my house at like, or arrive for the first bus to leave at 4 in the morning to arrive at Truman at 7. Except for it would arrive at 6:55, which would mean I would be late every day.
So the idea being that not everyone's trying to get somewhere at 9.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and so if you just rotate your end time to, you know, 6:25 for a 7 o'clock work time, or, you know, 5:25 for a 6 o'clock work time, you know, that would increase ridership amongst, you know, hourly workers.
All right, let's hear from Robbie on this.
Well, that becomes that's an issue that we deal with a lot now, and we deal a lot with it when it comes to a certain area that has a number of different companies in it, and each one of them has different shift times and those kinds of things, right? So you can't obviously take care of all those. So what we're trying to do, and the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce has made transportation one of its big five ideas, is get the business community involved in this process. If you get corporate America involved in this process, and then you can work with those companies to say, okay, if you guys shifted your time around by 5 minutes this way, and you, company ABC over here, did the same thing the other way, we can come to those connections, and then we can take care of your workforce, all right? What we need to do is make, you know, again, this goes back to when I said transit is that glue. Everybody wants it, but nobody, you know, not everybody wants to pay for it. And when you start routes in a certain area, and they go through to a certain part of the city, or that city might say, well, why do I have to pay for that? You know, that's, you're just going through our part of the metro, if you will. So it's getting the private sector involved, and then also making sure that everybody knows that transit is an incentive, okay? It's not an afterthought. So when it comes to the regional aspect, and when it comes to workforce flows, you talk about, we have people all the time that come to my office and say, hey, we can get workers in, but then I got to pay them $24 an hour to get them way out here, whatever, and then we only have a 40% retention rate. Well, you know, what if you paid them $22 and gave them a regional transit pass? So not only did they have the ability to go to and from work, but then all the rest of the time they had free access to the region too. These are the kind of new ways of stepping through the looking glass, if you will, and thinking about public transit for the next 20 to 50 years rather than the last 20. That's the stuff we need to do.
I will say, when I first started riding the bus, I had an employer at the time that did provide bus passes to all the employees, and that was part of what got me over that hump of giving it a try.
Well, let me tell you, where it's really working well is with our U-Pass program, with our universities, okay? With UMKC, it's part of their tuition. Any UMK student can jump on the bus, swipe their card, and it's free. The Metropolitan Community Colleges, the Johnson County Community College, the Art Institute, all of those folks and all of those students now have free access to the region, not just to and from, and that's making a big difference.
Let's talk to Patricia in Overland Park, who I think can speak to maybe the cultural shift required to get people on public transit, but also the sort of learning curve of how to do it. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. My question goes a little bit back in the conversation about a contributing factor of low ridership being an issue with people who are unaware of how to navigate the system. I guess my question is there any kind of program, a volunteer program, where maybe someone could ride with that person two or three times and kind of help them navigate and show them the way, when to get off and when the times are?
You know what, Patricia, that's a great idea. We actually do that with our folks with diverse abilities. We actually do that as a part of with our staff to teach people how to use the system, that kind of thing. Plus, also, we do it for companies. If there's a certain group or whatever that comes out and says they would like to learn, we have folks go out and teach them how to use the system too. I don't know if it's efficient enough for us to do it on a one-on-one basis yet, but I'd sure like to get there.
Culturally, it is sort of interesting that people take driver's ed in their public schools.
Or used to.
That's right.
Do you foresee some, with movements toward making public transit more robust and inclusive, that some kind of driver's ed equivalent would be made accessible for other modes of transportation?
Well, what I do see, Ms. Jean, is now that we're starting to do free public transit for the Kansas City High School kids and Center and Hickman Mills, that they are taking on that process within the school itself about, okay, we're going to give, Tim a pass, and then we're going to teach them. Okay, so I like that the school district is getting engaged in the process of helping us get people used to the public transit system. Dr. Bedell with the Kansas City School District, he took public transit, okay, in Baltimore, and he grew up on it. A lot of people have done public transit to and from school. So this is not new for him, and I'm glad he's so engaged with us. And having this as part of the curriculum, if you will, just like driver's ed was, I think is a fantastic idea.
Ron, jump in here.
Yeah, I will say that Mark also operates a program called RideShare that really promotes information about alternative commuting to employers primarily and workers. And so working with a company's workers on how to use the transit services that might be available to them is certainly something that we'd be able to help with.
You know, Robbie, we don't have time to get to this caller, but we have someone who is concerned about bus stops being removed from busy locations and a lack of benches and amenities. Can you speak to that?
Well, in the process, I believe it was Angie was talking about, she talked about Houston and some other cities that were going through a renaissance, if you will, as part of the redesign process. Those are exactly the folks we have looking at our redesign right now. And we're going through that process. That's going to mean some change, okay? And we don't know exactly what that looks like yet. However, when we get there, we'll definitely look into that. And I would encourage whoever that caller is to give me a call down at the ATA, and I'd be happy to talk to him about it or get him to get them to the right person.
Angie, parting words of advice for Kansas City based on your research nationally?
Yeah, I think that the last caller made a great point. Some of this stuff is relatively inexpensive, providing benches and shelters. It's going to be the fraction of a cost of a single highway project. And I think unless you really emphasize this culturally, you're not going to get much better outcomes. So it takes more investment. It takes more thought. And I think it's a good start to be having these conversations with people and talking about it here on the radio.
Well, Angie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Angie. It's been great talking
to you.
Thank you.
Angie Schmidt is a writer and editor at Streets Blog USA. If you want to keep up on her stories about transportation and in-studio guests, thank you. Ron Acklepool with us from MARC, Robbie Mackinnon of the KCATA. Thank you both.
Thanks, Ms. James.
Gina.
And that is a wrap. Go to kcur.org/centralstandard if you missed any part of this conversation and want to go back for a listen. We'll have it ready by the end of the day. kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, a local writer has written children's books to counterbalance the violence in the news. That story tomorrow. This show is produced by Melody Rowell with Coy Duggar, Chris Young, Suzanne Hogan, and Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman.